Richard Simon, Burial and Betrayal, Prophecy Right in the Promised Land, Then and Now.
It's a great pleasure for me to be here this morning. I'm sorry for the slightly later start that had been ideally envisioned. The handouts are on the way around, but we'll get underway right away. I'd like to look at the subject of burial and betrayal, property rights in the Promised Land, then and now. And obviously, we have the subject of the first instance that is recorded in the Torah of a purchase of property. And of course, the location is in Hebron, and Rabbeinu Bechaya says that Hebron is the place, Meshon Chibur, where the heaven and earth somehow merge, just like it says about Yerushalayim. And it's the place where the souls are connected between the earthly abode and their heavenly destiny. In any case, the parsha begins that we won't start at the very beginning, but Abraham recognizes he has the sad task of finding a burial place for his beloved wife. But Yochum Abraham me'alpinei meso in the second pasuk, but the rabbi Ches le'mor, and he addresses Bnei Ches. Now, we know that Abraham has in mind exactly where he wants to bury her. He knows exactly the location which he would like to use, but for some reason he first approaches Bnei Ches. Now, Bnei Ches represents like the council, the municipal authorities. So he doesn't immediately approach the seller whom he has in mind, the prospective seller, but he first, for some reason, finds it necessary to petition the municipal authorities. And he says, Ger v'toshav anochi imachem. Rashi, of course, comments on Ger v'toshav, that really, as far as you're concerned, I am a newcomer. I am a ger. I've only lived here a short period of time. My origins are in Mesopotamia, 1,000 miles to the east. But I'm also a Toshav. There's a veiled threat here. Like Rashi says, that if you would like to assist me, which is what I'm asking for, well and good. But if not, then I have the right to invoke my authority as a Toshav, because really, ultimately, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has granted this entire land to me. And we'll see that there is a kind of subtext that runs beneath the whole negotiations. So initially, he says to Bnei Ches, V'gevet Toshav Nechemchem, T'muli Achuzas Kever Imachem, give me an ancestral estate, a burial site, imachem, vekvar amesim ilfanai. Now, again, there seems to be a yitur lashon. Why does he have to say, tenu yachuzas kever imachem? I mean, if he has a request, let him get to it, and he does it only the next pasuk. He has in mind exactly who he wants to approach, and he gets to it, but only subsequently. Initially, he starts with a preamble. He says, I would like you to grant me Achuzas Kever. And why does it say Imachem? What do we need Imachem for? I mean, of course, we're in Hebron, so he's not going to ask them for something in another land or in another locale. Of course it's Imachem. Vekvaram Yisim Ilfanai. Okay, that we can understand. He says, there's an urgency here. I have to bury my wife. The Mefarshim say, I think it's in the Malbim, who says that Tenuli Achuzas Kever Imachem, he says like this, you know, every place, every city, it's true for London as well, I'm sure, has municipal burial plots, which probably are available for purchase, but they also have some kind of provisions for someone who dies without means, without family. I mean, every person's remains have to be disposed of in some way with a modicum of dignity, and they have some location, it's probably far away, very undistinguished, and that's where they bury people who are just passing through and just die suddenly. So he asks for Achuzas Kever Imachem. I would like one not in a far off part, not in a place where you bury the destitute and the wanderers, the vagrants, but rather Imachem. I want a place of distinction. I want a place of dignity. And that's why he says Achuzas Kever, because I would like a place, which that's rendered here in our friends from Art Scroll, an estate for a burial site with you, a place that can become an ancestral location where in the fullness of time I can be buried and my progeny can be buried there as well. So he's asking, he has a request, which he presents to them in principle. He hasn't yet gotten to the location that he has in mind, but he wants to know in principle, albeit the fact that I'm a newcomer, will you give me a place? Now, the B'nai Ches, they owned the whole area, and it wasn't maybe a foregone conclusion that they would grant a prominent and a distinguished burial plot to a newcomer. Therefore, he has to present this as a special petition, and probably there are people here in the business who know about how that goes, how that sort of thing goes along. Okay. So they respond as well. You know what? You are an ambassador of God. Wherever you are, the land is yours. We regard you so highly. Wherever you like, the most distinguished place you can choose. No one is going to withhold from you the place that you want. So they answer in a very expansive way, very cooperative. He wants to know, in principle, can I be very good? It's absolutely, wherever you like. No one would think of withholding from you. It's interesting, this expression, a very beautiful, eloquent turn of phrase, and I've rendered it a kind of ambassador of God. You are like a citizen of the world. You know, wherever you are, you will automatically have the rights of citizenship. He was so esteemed. Reminded of probably a name that's not often invoked here in the Space Medrash, Albert Einstein. Once said, you know, he was born in Germany, but he was persecuted as a Jew, and he fled to France, and ultimately, of course, to America. And he said, if my theory of relativity is proven to be correct, then the French will call me a Frenchman, and the Germans will call me a citizen of the world. If it's proven to be incorrect, the French will call me a German, and the Germans will call me a Jew. So, you know, sometimes a person's image is dependent on those factors. And then Avraham Avinu, Lahavdil, was Nesi Elokim, a citizen of the world. Nobody will withhold his land from you. So he says, go ahead. So they say, Vakasha, you know, for sure, you're okay, you know, wherever you want. V'yakam Avraham Mishnat Olam Arsu Necheis. But every time they more in Yeshes Nafshichem Likvoris Meisinu Fanai, and Avraham again repeats as well, if you really want to help me, if you're so certain that you're going to facilitate my request, then I've got a specific petition for you. Shma'uni, listen. Ufigu li be'efron ben Tzochar. Figu means like confronting on my behalf. Be my broker. Of course, I could go to him directly, but you know, you want to help me, so it will have more prestige, it will have more impact coming from you. Approach on my behalf, Ephron ben Socha. Vayitem yis maras ha-machpelah shelo. Now look, it's reading just above, about halfway down. You don't have actually in the Hebrew, you don't have the psukim are not identified, where it says, Asher b'ktei sadehu. It's underlined. B'kesef malei yitinen ali. Please, I want to pay full price for it, but Socha, come close us cover. Now, why is he saying Asher b'ktei sadehu? He identifies this cave, apparently was known, had a name even, apparently even at that time, Maras HaMachpelah Asher lo belongs to him, Asher b'ktei sadehu. It's in the edge of his field. What's the significance in the edge of his field? What do you think? What could be the significance of identifying exactly where it is? Of what relevance is it to us, or to him, or to them? In those days, land was used primarily for agricultural purposes. So if a person owned land, it was in order to work the land, to grow crops. When he says a cave is not essentially of something of great value, for the most part, you can't grow anything in a cave. So what's a cave good for? Well, it's not really that useful. And probably that's why Avraham Avinu thought, well, I'm going to ask for a cave, so it won't be difficult for him to part with it. He adds, I should be say, said it's on the edge of his field. It won't even disrupt. He doesn't have to give me rights of access to his field, because it's only on the edge of the field anyway. So he'll sell me that part on the edge of the field. I want to pay full price for it. He already said, the kesef malei yitinen ali, I want to pay for it. Then the Torah goes on, Ephron yoshev b'soch b'necheis, V'yan Ephron ha-chiti es Avraham ba'aznei v'nei ches l'chol ba'i shari rolemoa. So, in a public forum, says explicitly, l'b'nei ches, the municipal, councillors are there, and in that public setting, Ephron replies as follows, Lo Adoni, Shmaeni, no, you want to buy it? No, absolutely not. It's yours. The field is yours. The cave which is in the field is yours. In full view, you know, it's yours. Now, do you see the difference between what Ephron says he's going to provide and what Abraham had asked for in the first place? What did Abraham ask for? The cave, Asher, Yitzei Sadehu. And what does Ephron respond? Hasad and Asatilah. You want the field? You've got it. V'amara Asher Bo. Is the Ma'ara in the field? No, it's in the edge of the field. Ephron is a crafty character, as we well know. Ephron says, he sees Abram wants the cave, says, you know what? You want the cave? You're not getting it. You want it? It's a package deal. You've got to take the whole thing. Got to take the field. Got to take the cave. I should be, which is in the middle of the field, which it isn't even. But he says, no, I'm not selling the cave. I'm not selling it. You want it? It's a package. You've got to buy the whole thing. But of course, that's the subtext. What is he saying explicitly? It's yours. I'm giving it to you. Now, for some reason, Ephron, although Chazal exoriate Ephron as Rashaim Omrim Haber Vafilam Aglosim, but Ephron for some reason knows that Abraham is going to buy it with money. He's going to pay for it. Even though he's a big talker, it's yours for free, I will not give it to you, of course. He seems to be certain, and we'll find out why shortly, that Abraham is going to pay good money for it. And that's why he's keen to increase the actual sale. He wants to include much more in the sale. Perhaps we'll take a quick look at Rabbeinu Bechaya here, just in source number 2 of Medesh. Eretz Adam and Shekel Kesed Beniva and Chama. Okay, that's a little bit later on. So Rabbeinu Bechaya says that he quotes what the same manager Rashi quotes, that tzadikim omrim ma'at osim harbeh, and rashayim omrim habev afilu ma'at lo osim. But if you look later on where it's underlined, he points out something. For the Ephron rasha haya v'haisa einu tzara, Ephron was voracious, you know, and he was greedy. And it says einu tzara Ephron ksiv. The word Ephron, the name Ephron, is written the last time the name appears in this parasha. Ephron is written without the vav, so it's a gematria ra'ayin. Ephron is a gematria ra'ayin. And how much is that gematria? 400. Rabbeinu Bechaya goes on to say that this number 400 is associated with ra'ayin, and he says, for example, that it's associated with because it's the gematria of. But he also says that the Esav, later on, Esav came to Yaakov v'arba'meos ish imo, and he says that the Golus was 400 years, and he says that the letter Tuf is the last letter of the alphabet as well. It represents the person who wants to destroy, wants to acquire everything. He's got ra'ayin, he's so greedy, he wants it all. So Ephron demands 400 shekel kesef, as we'll soon see. But let's now go back to the dialogue, to the negotiations here. I just want to mention one other thing that's very important. In many places, and it's true even in the world today, you can't buy land in a particular country unless you're a citizen of that country. You can't just buy land, in many countries, even today, you can't buy land. You need special permission. Unless you're a citizen, as an overseas, as a newcomer, you can't buy land. That's why Abraham needed to petition the Bnei Ches in principle. Am I eligible to acquire a freehold purchase even though I'm Gerber Tosha? So that's why he had to approach them first. It's interesting, even in England, for a long time, it was uncertain in English law if a Jew was allowed to own land in England. 250 years after the Jews were allowed to return under Oliver Cromwell in 1656, it was still uncertain in English law if a Jew was allowed to own land. Akedah Captain Moses Montefiore, who was a personal friend of Queen Victoria, he acquired as a leasehold. He acquired his estate in Ramsgate, and it was years and years before it was established that a Jew could actually own land as a freehold. 250 years after they were first admitted back. Since then, quite a few Jews have bought land in England and have even made a few pounds along the way, so we're making up for it ever since. But it was the same way there in Hebron as well. He had to first petition in principle. Yes, absolutely, no problem. Now, Avram knows exactly what he wants and who he wants it from. So Ephron said, no, it's a package deal, my friend. So Avram says, take the money. Ephron has already told him, there's no money here, it's yours as a gift. But look how he responds. V'yan Ephron and Avram limor lo, Adoni shma'eni, listen. Eretz abal mayel shekel kesef b'ini v'incha mahi, a piece of land, it's only going to cost you 400 shekel kesef between you and me, we're such good friends. How much is it, 400 shekel? Let's make spot for it, go ahead, bury your dead. And then it says, Vayishma Avram el Ephron. Abraham heard him loud and clear. When he says, you know, a piece of land that's only worth 400 shekel between you and me, what is it? You know, just bury your dead. It's only worth 400 shekel anyway. What does Abraham hear? Give me the money. That's exactly what Ephron is saying. Only 400 shekel? He understands exactly. He's demanding 400 shekel. And of course, Vayishma Abraham, he listens to him. Vayishkol Avram le Ephron es hakesef asher diber ba'azim le'cheis. Abamel shekel kesef over la socher, and he gives him 400 silver coins over la socher in negotiable currency. Over la socher, because in those days, you know, private people would sometimes mint their own coins, and depending on whose seal was on the coin, some were more reliable and some were less reliable. Some were suspect maybe for diluting or using an alloy. It wasn't pure silver, it wasn't pure gold, and other things like that. Even nowadays, some currencies are acceptable all over the world. If you've got a wad of $100 bills, you can spend it anywhere in the world. Some currencies are not good even in their own country, you know. So in a similar way, Abraham, he didn't even ask for Ovel HaSocher, but Abraham paid him out 400 shekels as Ovel HaSocher. And then it says, "V'yah comes to Ephron Hashem v'machal Hashem lifnei Mamreya." So Adam v'Amar Hashem v'cholait. It all was given to Abraham the Mikne le'inei v'nei cheshin. It was all in full public view. This whole negotiation, which occupies a very substantial parashah in the Torah, requires an explanation. Why does the Torah go into such detail? How much he offered, how much he paid, the fact that first he insisted on paying, and then they insisted on giving it to him for free, and in the end, of course, he paid a lot of money for it. But how much was 400 shekel? Cass, if you turn the page over, you see in source number 5, Arya Kaplan does a little calculation. A shekel is a unit of weight equal to 22.8 grams or 0.8 ounces. A silver shekel was therefore a little smaller than a silver dollar and worth around $1. But of course, there's been a lot of inflation in the last 4,000 years. Abraham therefore paid 20 pounds of silver or about $400 for the cave. Considering land values at the time, this was highly excessive. Thus, for example, King Omri paid only 6,000 shekels for the entire territory of Shomron. Yirmiyah paid only 17 shekels for a property that was at least as large as Machpelah. For comparison, this to me is the most fascinating. According to Hammurabi code, which was contemporaneous with Avram Avinu, Lahavdil, a year's wage for a working man was between 6 and 8 shekels. And Avram paid 400 shekels for a cave. So you have a sense of how much this guy Ephron was extorting from Avram Avinu. The fascinating thing to consider is what would have been if Abraham had called his bluff. Ephron said, "It's yours for free." The Bnei Chai said, "No one would hold his property from you. It's yours." What if I would say, "Thank you very much. You're so generous. I really appreciate your gesture at this time of my distress, and I'm going to now bury my dead here, and I appreciate you giving it to me as a gift." In a public forum, if Ephron had offered it in that way, which he did, Avram could have called his bluff. He could have said, "Okay, thank you." But Avram is determined to pay for it. And there must be a reason for it. And I want to tell you that when you look elsewhere in the Torah, you find that there are other people also who bought land in Eretz Yisrael in very significant ways. Avram Avinu bought Maris HaMachpelah. Yaakov Avinu also bought land. It's in source number 6. Vayavo Yaakov Shalem Ir Shemet. A couple of generations later, after Yaakov has come back from his his confrontation with living with Lavan, confrontation with Esav, and he makes his way and he survives and he arrives complete Ir Shechem, Ashevetz Kanan Bevo Mitanan, etc. For Yikan Eschel Kas Hasada, he bought a parcel of land Asher Natan Shamo Alom Yabnei Chamor Avi Shechem. The Mea Kesita, he paid Mea Kesita for it, because it also is a certain currency, and that's how much he paid for it. And the Torah doesn't elaborate at length, but it does say he bought land in Eretz Yisrael. Kadosh Baruch Hu promised to Avraham Avinu the whole land, and yet Avraham bought still a piece of land, and Yaakov also bought a piece of land. And that same piece of land, by the way, if you look in the next selection, this Atmos Yosef and Shehelu Bnei Yisrael Mitzrayim covered Bishchem Bchelkas Asad Shekana Yaakov. Later on, in Sefer Yehoshua, the remains of Yosef were interred exactly in that place that Yaakov bought. The land that Yaakov purchased, that was the same land generations and hundreds of years later where they buried Yosef. And we find another place in Tanakh where somebody bought land, a very important piece of land. And this is, of course, David HaMelech. At the very end of Sefer Shmuel Beis, David HaMelech bought land to build the Beis HaMikdash. Of course, he didn't get around to building it, but he did buy the land for it. And that is in source number 8. We won't do it at length because our time is short. But David approached a Ravna, a Yevusi, and he said, I would like to buy this threshing floor. And it's interesting, a similar dialogue, not that much different than Ephron. We have a similar thing where Avraham says, "Madu abaldeni amelech elavdo v'yemer David lichnos min chasa gor nevos mizbeach Hashem," and he answers in a similar kind of way, and he says, "Well, you know, if you want it, then I'd like to give it to you as a gift, you know." And he says, "You're the king, and so if you want it, fine, it's yours." And David Amelech says, "No. V'yemer Amelech elavdo lo lo ki kamele kneme oscha b'lechir v'lo alel Hashem elokai." I'm not going to send up offer freebies to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I want to buy it. But he can't have it, so he bought it. It says in Shmuel he bought it for 50 shekel, but in Divrei HaYamim it says he bought it for 600 shekel. The Gemara says it means 50 shekel per shevet. David HaMelech sort of levied a special tax or something, that's a 50 shekel for each shalish. He paid 600 shekel for the place where the Beis HaMikdash would be built. The question is, Avraham Avinu bought land in Eretz Yisrael. Yaakov bought land. David HaMelech later bought land and a very important piece of land. How about Yitzchak? Why didn't Yitzchak buy land in Eretz Yisrael? And it's not just a speculative question, because Yitzchak, his connection to Eretz Yisrael was more profound than the others. He was born in Eretz Yisrael. He never left Eretz. One time he wanted to leave, Hashem said, "Don't leave." He died in Eretz Yisrael. His connection to the land was closer than any of the others. Avraham Avinu came from afar. He lived most of his life, the first many years, 75 years of his life, lived in Haran. And Yaakov spent a lot of his time out of Eretz Yisrael. He fled for many years, and then at the end of his life, he went down to Mitzrayim. Yitzchak was the real Toshav. Yitzchak was the one who was there. Definitely later, he lived all his life. He never left, and he didn't buy the land in Eretz Yisrael. And the locations are interesting as well. Maras HaMachpelah is in Hebron. This purchase of Yaakov is of Yaakov's in Shechem, and David HaMelech bought the Har HaMoriah, the Mokom HaMikdash. This is the axis of Eretz Yisrael. And it's interesting, why do they insist on buying it? The answer is, I'd like to suggest that, of course, when Klal Yisrael is ascendant spiritually, we don't need to buy Eretz Yisrael, we don't need to pay for it, it's ours by right. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has granted it to us. That's the first Rashi in the Torah. But the Avos wanted to establish the possibility of another way. Is there any way that we can have a foothold in Eretz Yisrael when we're not worthy of it spiritually? Is there an alternative method? And they wanted to establish an alternative method by buying it, by paying money for it. That is an alternative method. That is a way, by the cooperation, by the agreement, when we are worthy, we don't need anybody's agreement. It's ours by right. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give it to us. But what if we're not worthy? Is there a way that we can still get some foothold in Eretz Yisrael, even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't yet give it to us eternally because we're not worthy at that time, and they wanted to establish a possible way by buying it? But then it requires the assent of the Umos HaOlam as well. It's very interesting. If you look in the last source, because I know our time is up, there you have the end of Divrei HaYamim, which is actually the end of the Tanakh as well. It says that Bishnas Achas the Koresh, so you have the Koresh, the Melech Paras, the Cyrus of Persia, and he made an announcement. He said, you know what, I am going to allow the Jewish people to return to their land. Ha'ir HaSharuach Ha'ir HaShem Es Ruach Koresh Melech Paras V'yaber Kol B'chol Matuz V'gamel Mimichtav L'mor Kol Amar Koresh Mi Vachem Mikol, I'm skipping Mi Vachem Mi vachem mikol amo Hashem lo kavimo v'yah. Whoever wants to go up can go up. This was with permission of Koresh, and it seems to me that there may be a modern day echo of this same scenario. When we are worthy, halavai, we should be very soon. We don't need anybody's permission. We don't need resolutions. We don't need cooperation. We don't need negotiations. We don't need George Bush and Condoleezza Rice and all the other stuff. We don't need any of them. But what if we're not yet completely worthy? Then we have another way, which the Avos have established a precedent. There is an alternative way. It's a harder way. It's a way with negotiation. It's a way with money, and we've got to pay for it, and we paid a heavy price for it. And it's fascinating that the three places that they bought are the axis of Eretz Yisrael, which are the most contested ad hayom hazeh, to this very day. Hebron and Shechem and Har HaBayis, the places that they bought are the places which are the most vigorously contested ad hayom hazeh. And yet this is the precedent, and this is the possibility of our having a foothold in Eretz Yisrael even before we are fully worthy for the coming of Mashiach. Thank you very much. Because Yitzchak represents the one who doesn't need to buy. Yitzchak is the one who's the perfect Jew. He doesn't need to buy. Yitzchak is the one who has it by right, by his very nature. So he didn't have to buy. The other one bought.